Well, I don't know any other week in the more than 40 years I've been doing this that I've written more sermons and thrown away more sermons. Yeah, I'll speak a little bit about the advertised subject because it's important to talk about God and gods and theology when the world is particularly troubling and challenging. And you may have a feeling, as I have a feeling, of being kind of adrift and at a loss to keep up with our world. I wrote several sermons. One kind of sweet and poetic, all about the God that I don't believe in. It's important to talk about the God that I don't believe in, which is Zeus, the angry old jealous guy. I'm sorry, the angry old jealous white guy up in the golden throne, hurling lightning bolts, cracking thunder, punishing people, blessing sports teams, filling out his bracket for the NCAA, and basically obsessed with the clicker and watching sports and not necessarily keeping track of the important things in the world. It was a nice sermon, but it didn't speak to my condition. And when I sit down to try to write something, what I'm really doing is trying to speak to my condition, to what is challenging me, stimulating, inspiring, threatening. And this was a week, these were 2 weeks, where I think most of the thoughtful world was ready for a sermon on Job, where everything that seems that it could have gone wrong with the world went wrong with the world. And so I was going to talk about that, but I was going to talk about it in the more normal sense. It's a little bit distant for many people, but not for my family, which was, how do you talk about God? How is it possible to talk about God after Auschwitz? Where was humanity when inhumanity reigned? Where was God to stop the trains, to stop the ovens? Where was God? Where was humanity? But you don't have to go back to Auschwitz. You can go to last week. Where was God of the earthquake? Where was the God of that 9.0 earthquake that shook a nation, that shook anybody's sense of invulnerability, that should shake anyone's sense that we're not connected to every person and every nation in the world, that shook literally the earth, moved it some degrees off of its axis, moved tectonic plates, but will it move tectonic plates of thinking about just how connected we are? We're often dealing with what we consider to be earthquakes and catastrophes in what we think of as primitive places, usually places without good building codes. And so we look at Haiti, and we saw all of the destruction there, and humanity showed some of its best in really putting out an effort for a while to deal with that human pain, with that suffering, with that mass death. What Japan teaches us is that it is important to be prepared. Their buildings did remarkably well. The lesson of all the disaster and catastrophe is that some preparation, important preparation, and retrofitting and building codes saves hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of lives. There was a great success story in Japan about human ingenuity and dealing with the catastrophe of an earthquake. People died, and people will always die in catastrophes, but a much greater catastrophe was averted. And also, a much greater catastrophe happened, as we all know, with the tsunami. And I guess the question that gets asked biblically, was God in the fire that spoke to Moses? Was God in the earthquake? Was God in the tsunami? The unbelievable force of nature. My first sermon was going to talk about the wonder of nature in our connection with nature, and I believe it, but I'm not sentimental. Nature is rough and tough, and it's not just after you. It's not personal, but it is awesome and awful with power beyond human imagining. People think of a tsunami as a wave. It's not a wave. It's an ocean. I was fortunate enough when I was young and stupid, as opposed to being older and stupid, that when the Alaska earthquake hit, I was off studying in Vienna. But I had friends who were surfer dudes who said, wow, let's grab our boards and go out to Malibu. Maybe if there's a tsunami, we can surf it. A tsunami is not a wave. A wave, 3 feet thick, rises up, crashes down, it can crush you. It can get up to 30, 40, 50 feet high, and it's possible to ride, and it's also possible to be killed, as one of the great contemporary surfers was killed this last week at Mavericks. But it's 3, 6, 9 feet thick as it rises up. A tsunami is the ocean. It isn't a wave that's hitting you. That ocean comes out, and its thickness is the distance between the shore and where the seismic event took place. Its power is beyond our ability to wrap our minds around. And so you see it picking up houses, destroying lives, running in 10 kilometers, 6 miles into the aptly named floodplains in Japan, and wiping out lives and hopes and dreams. And we are called to know our connection. We share that other end of the sea. It rocks back and forth. Tsunamis coming to Crescent City, to Santa Cruz, to Marina del Rey. Tsunamis coming to the Galapagos Islands, to the shores of Chile, and causing destruction there. And the ocean, like a bathtub that's been moved, is going back and forth with a power that we can't imagine. And so we look at that. And then for the trifecta, the nuclear plant. The nuclear plants, not 1 3-mile island, but 6 3-mile islands. Not yet a full Chernobyl, but an almost Chernobyl. And we have the visible powers of nature, and we have the invisible powers of the combination of nature, uranium, and what we have done to it in order to concentrate it and get power out of it. And we have human hubris, the idea that we can create safe and fail-safe systems. And we look at what is going on, and we know that our planning and our intelligence, however sophisticated it is never foolproof. And we can do all of our due diligence and still have tragedy, catastrophe, disaster beyond our imagining. And our imaginations are pretty good right now. But if a couple of those do full meltdowns, we've only seen the beginning. No, do not run out and buy iodine tablets. That's not the answer here for us. But this has been a week of nightmares. As this was going on, a song from the 60s went into my head, Just a Little Rain. What have they done to the rain? Just a little rain falling all around, the gentle rain that falls for years. And the boy disappears, the rain keeps falling like heavenly tears. What have they done to the rain? Just a little wind blowing all around, the gentle wind that blows for years. Just a little wind with some smoke in its eye, the leaves turn their face as the breeze blows by, and what have they done to the rain? The rain that brings radioactivity to the people of Japan and into the food chain, this is a very important issue. A lot of people were concerned, well, why are we being involved with Japan? They're wealthy. America's wealthy. Should the world have been concerned with wealthy America and our incomplete and inept response to Katrina? Hungry people in danger of cold, of starvation, of disease, who are mourning, who are freezing, and now they have to worry about radiation in the air and in the food. Do we have a responsibility to at least feel a sense of our connection with them? I think so. This week has been, for me, like a living nightmare in some ways. Again, our human genius gets used for war. I woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning, not last night, but the night before. Had been hopeful about a ceasefire in Libya, and woke up at 4 to hear that Gaddafi's troops were going in to the rebel town and were firing indiscriminately, and I knew what that would mean. And so again, we take our human genius for technology and we turn it to war. We turn it to the destruction of our fellow human beings. And I don't have an easy answer to this. I'm torn. I'm torn up. I know Libya. I lived next door to it for 2 years. I listened to their radio. I mostly understand their dialect. It's a little bit different from my Tunisian dialect. And I follow the stories. And it's been a nightmare. But we Americans, and I dare say Europeans, so do not understand the society and the culture and the tribal nature of what's going on. We do not understand that Libya is not like Tunisia, which thinks of itself as a country, or Egypt that thinks of itself as a country. It's much more like Iraq. Even though they're all Sunni Muslims in Libya, there are three primary tribes there that don't necessarily get along. In some ways, they're three countries. And I suspect we don't understand their tribal systems very well or what's going to happen. But the instinct to stop slaughter is a decent instinct. But it's also like a nightmare for me, because I wake up from this sense of the 60s, the sense when we were marching against a war that we didn't fully understand, that we didn't see an end to. And there are two of those that are going on at the moment. I wake up to a nightmare of this president saying the same words that the last president said. Our cause is just and our resolve is firm. And when I hear those words, my antenna go up and I become deeply worried and concerned. Not necessarily filled with cynicism and not at all filled with an easy answer. But I'm engaged in this because this is very frightening stuff. And I have to ask myself, honestly, even if I can't come up with an answer or a final answer, would we be using our genius and Tomahawk missiles and bombers and AWACS if Libya did not have oil but only grew broccoli? That's an important question. Because our good friends, the Saudis, are enabling the Bahraini minority to rule and to kill the Shiite majority. Our good friends in Yemen are killing their own people. But our attention goes to Libya. Should it go to Libya? Or should it go everywhere? What are the limits of our power? What are the limits of our compassion? What are the limits of our reason? And that raises that difficult theological issue. Where is God or gods in all of this? In all of this anger and hate and destruction. I can't wrap my heart around a God who blesses wars, who takes sides, a God who is on our side. I can't wrap my head around a God that is egotistical and jealous and insecure and needs to be placated. I can't wrap my head or my heart around the Stockholm Syndrome God who is awesome in power but needs flattery. This is what you do when you're held hostage. You feel those powers over life and death. But I feel the light in the universe. I feel the miracle of creation. I respond to Psalm 104 that says, God put on the light as a raiment. I respond to the gospel narrative where God becomes incarnate in flesh, for me not in one person, but in every person. And it becomes our job not to understand a divine plan, but to see the spark of divinity, to the extent that that word means something poetically to each of us, in each of us, and in all creation, in the farthest star, and in the throbbing vein on our neck. It isn't about the words. People often ask me, can you have a religion? What kind of religion do you have if you don't have a necessary belief in God? What do they mean by religion is usually a dogma about God. But that's usually Zeus. Zeus who became Zeus Pitar, who became Jupiter, who became Deus Pater. I find the glory in creation itself. The religion is the sense of connection that we have with each other and with our world. The sense that our lives, this flash of light that we have between two eternities of darkness, is not meaningless but can be imbued with meaning by what we see, by what we choose, by what we do, by how we respond to the needs out there. When we respond, when we connect to nature in all its awesome and awful power, when we respond to humanity with all of our terrible instincts, I wouldn't have to make up too much if I did go to confession. I could probably tell the truth and have the Father have gone, oh my goodness, what did I do? What am I doing in here? But with all of our ability to do good and to do evil, with all of our abilities to connect, that's where our religions manifest themselves. Not in belief, not in my prayer is better than yours, my God can beat up your God, my poetry is better than your poetry, but how do we act? How do we get connected to the world? What do we do with the widow, with the orphan, with the poor, with the hungry, with the starving? How do we respond to the fire, to the flood, to the tsunami, to the visible aspects of catastrophe, the tsunami, and the invisible aspects of radiation? How do we respond to a world that sometimes seems to go mad? Because the other song that kept going through my head was the Barry Maguire, Eve of Destruction. The world's gone mad. It's exploding, guns firing, bullets loading. You're old enough to die, but not for voting, and even the Jordan River's got bodies floating. That's part of the soundtrack of my life that's been replayed in these last very event-packed weeks. And yet, there's so much beauty. There's so much potential. There's so much that we bring out in others and in ourselves when we connect to the world. I don't believe, theologically, that all of these problems are trials and tests. God didn't create a tsunami so that my heart would open up and I would have the opportunity of doing something good. There was a tsunami. My heart opens up, and I have the opportunity of doing something good. But I do not ascribe reason or plan to it. It's my job. It's your job to find reason, to find your own ways of connecting, to do your own triage and find out what are our individual gifts of compassion, of time, and of talent where we can make a difference. Giving and gaining at the same time, because we feel that connection to a world that is filled with pain and filled with hope and filled with glory, and we can respond affirmatively to all of those things. If we only fight about the words of theology and of ritual, we miss the point of religion. In many ways, the original beginning of the first draft of the sermon was, I get down on my knees and thank God that I'm an atheist. And not for making me an atheist, but that I'm an atheist, meaning I don't believe in Zeus. And that God gets in the way of my religion. That God is not a necessary aspect of my religion. That God gets in the way with all of the planning and all of the purpose. It's our job to take that chaos, the power that's unimaginable of life, the power in the stars and the nova and the supernova, and find order, find pattern, and find a way of making a difference while the light shines within.